The opposite of spoiled. Raising kids who are grounded, generous, and smart about money. Author, Ron Libier. Why we need to talk about money. Too many parents avoid talking about money when there is enough money for every basic need, because of the fear that talking about money too much will produce money-grubbing kids. Nan J. Morrison, who runs the Council for Economic Education, summed up the misconception best when she complained about the persistent parental belief that too much conversation about money actually subverts kids' values. It's as if it were somehow dirty and not an essential part of daily life. Any conversation about money has to consider the emotional context, the wave of mixed feelings almost all of us experience about the money we have and what others around us spend. People are not dispassionate about money, and they're certainly not calm and rational about their kids. This potent mix then often makes it incredibly hard for parents to talk openly and honestly with their children about the topic. Spoiled and unspoiled. Spoiled children tend to have four primary things in common, though they don't all have to be present at once. They have few chores or other responsibilities. There aren't many rules that govern their behavior or schedules. Parents and others lavish them with time and assistance. They have a lot of material possessions. Talking about money and values. Every conversation about money is also about values. Allowance is about patience. Giving is about generosity. Work is about perseverance. Negotiating their wants and needs and the differences between them both has a lot to do with thrift and prudence. And running through all these conversations is a desire for kids to have perspective, to know why they may have more than most people in the world but will probably never have more than every one of their peers. And why there's no shame in having less, as long as you're grateful for what you have. How to start the money conversations. Children are going to seek out information about money in any way they can, since it's one of everyday life's aspects. They will ask Google and present their findings to us. They will inquire about any number of sensitive topics. What do you make? Are we rich? Can we buy that homeless man an apartment? Why do you ask? Is a useful response. It will give the parent at least 10 seconds to think through potential responses, depending on the reason for the question. The why do you ask strategy gives you a shot at finding the source of anxiety. Once it's known, it often becomes clear that most kids have no interest in the net worth number, and that they just want reassurance that they won't have to move or leave their school or give up a pet. The big questions. One example is, are we poor? Starting in preschool, kids notice that other kids have things that they want to have too. This tends to weigh heavily in their minds compared to the fact they probably have some things that other friends don't have. So the younger ones who don't know any better may wonder if being poor is the reason they don't have all the things they want. If you ask why they're asking, that may be the reason. Still, this is a relatively easy question to answer for families who are not actually poor. People who are poor don't have everything they need, like food and clothing and medicine. We have those things, so we're not poor. Another example is, are we rich? This is challenging, since adults themselves don't agree about what it means to be rich. Ask someone open-ended questions to steer the conversations. Does it mean someone has a lot of stuff or a big house? That's the usual definition for younger kids. How much stuff and of what kind? Do we know how much the stuff costs? It's also worth questioning whether being rich matters much anyway. The most important attributes for friends and classmates are things like kindness, loyalty, creativity, and generosity, anyhow. Kids who lack those qualities are no fun otherwise, no matter how much stuff they have. The allowance debates. Most parents deliver a consistent message. Do the work, and we'll give you the money to save up to buy the stuff. We should certainly do our part at home by making them do all kinds of chores. But they ought to do them for the same reason we do, because chores need to be done, and not with the expectation of compensation. If they do them poorly, there are plenty of valuable privileges we can take away, aside from withholding money. So allowance ought to stand on its own, not as a wage, but as a teaching tool that gets sharper and more potent over a decade or so of annual raises and increasing responsibility. How materialistic kids are made. Social scientists have spent decades weighing in on this. Materialistic people focus more on stuff than on people and relationships. They genuinely believe that more stuff will make them happy. Children who watch lots of television commercials are clearly vulnerable. Yes, they take in all sorts of commercial messages each day, whether we want them to or not. Explaining why and how we give. Parents have an essential role to play in modeling generosity, and researchers have shown that if parents give, kids tend to as well. Most important, it helps if parents talk to their offspring about giving too. The same is true for volunteering. Why kids should work. What our kids can learn from paid employment is a work ethic. That loose phrase that captures the ability to listen, exert ourselves, cooperate with others, do our best, and stick to a task until we've done it and done it right. No one wants to return to the days when children worked full-time on the farm or in factories at the age of 12. But many parents have swung to the opposite extreme in the past decade or two, shielding even their oldest children at home from paid work altogether. Better chores, more of them, and sooner. Working at a job before you're of legal age is a bit extreme, even if it may land you in a prestigious Penn lab. So start the job in the home, where we can help our kids act on a drive for competence. Indeed, in many urban and suburban families, the chores that we assign don't add up to much. It's all too easy to default the assumption that it's more trouble to teach kids how to perform more complicated household tasks than it is to just do them ourselves, indefinitely. In doing so, we send a clear, strong message, according to Damon. We expect little of you, and you're living mostly for yourself. Why we are confused about class. Many parents avoid talking to their kids about socioeconomic status because they believe that children don't notice class differences until they're teenagers. But very young children have a basic sense of the words rich and poor. How much is enough? All about trade-offs. We can't have or do everything we want, and it's a lesson we need to remind our kids of often. Even if there's enough money, there's not enough time. At its roots, the question of how much is enough is reflected in choices we make nearly every day. And many of these choices are trade-offs. How much is enough? And what should we trade off so that we have all the things we need and enough of what we want to make us as happy as possible? It's a savings question when it comes to helping kids learn to buy things that will give them the most utility and joy. It's a question of impact when giving money away and trying to maximize the good it does. When kids start earning, we want them to figure out how much they need and to what end. And when we reflect on what we have, we want our kids to grow into young adults with perspective. People with a healthy definition of enough that is unique to them and isn't based on what everyone else has or does.